You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Rangers are the defending AL West champions and are going to try to repeat in 2017, but it might be a little bit challenging. Let's talk to T.R. Sullivan about that. I'm Allison Futter. T.R., so after when the winter meetings had concluded, the rumor was that they had signed Carlos Gomez, which is now official. They've seen a lot of free agents sign with other teams. At this point, comparing the team from where it is now to the team like a year ago, are you concerned with sort of the makeup of the team as it is right now?
Allison, John Daniels says that the Rangers are better than they were right now than they were on opening day last year. I still think they need another bat in the lineup, either a designated hitter or first base, depending on how they want to use Ryan Rua and Joey Gallo and Jerickson Profar. But, you know, they've lost both Carlos Beltran and Mitch Moreland. So I think they're going to need at least one veteran bat either to come in and be the DH or to compete at first base or something like that. I think that's right now the biggest missing piece they have on the team.
Yeah, it's easy to look at, and so I'm reading some of your coverage. They had six players become free agents at the end of the season. Four of them are now just about out the door. Now four of them are officially out the door. That could raise alarm bells. But the Rangers, like you just named, three really young, good players. They do still have a pipeline of talent coming up, which I guess makes it a little bit not as worrisome that they're going to take a big decline in 17, even though 2018 could be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, Allison, it all depends on how much they want to put their faith in Joey Gallo and Ryan Rua. They could sit there and split time at first base and designated hitter the way that Prince Fielder and Mitch Moreland did. It's just going to take a leap of faith for them. You know, Joey Gallo's had some great success in the minor leagues. He struggled at the big league level. Ryan Ruiz, shown he can hit at the big league level on a very limited basis, and most of it has been against left-handed pitching. So, again, it just depends on how much of a leap of faith you want to take on these two guys. And I think Jerickson Profar could play a big role on this team, although Profar is adamant that he wants to go play shortstop somewhere.
I'm looking at the situation with Colby Lewis, which I think is pretty interesting. So he's still looking for a job. The Rangers have always had interest in retaining him. There are some factors that go along with that. One, just the fact that they don't know if he's going to really be, a full healthy pitcher. There's also not a lot of room on the roster for him. So, is it kind of a stare down at this point, or are they maybe waiting for maybe his price to drop, or what would it take for them to re-sign him?
I think they'd love to sign the minor league contract. I don't know if Colby wants to do that or not, but I don't think it could hurt him if the price is right. The big thing with Colby is the injuries. He's had so many injuries and surgeries, and, he keeps coming back strong from them and keeps pitching, pretty decently. So just a matter of, deciding if he wants to come in on a minor league contract or he wants a major league deal, and if somebody else will give it to him.
So my last thought, as we were all watching the Rangers season last year, especially in the second half, they had all those come-from-behind wins, all those last-at-bat wins, all those one-run wins. I remember thinking the whole time, this will never happen again. This is just there was something magical going on with them, and it was just amazing to watch. But, as you were watching all of that unfold, did you kind of think the same thing? This is one of those anomalies? And it kind of goes the other way, too, with losing a lot of one-run games. It's going to be hard to kind of repeat that if they need to, squeak by with these last at-bat wins.
I think you bring up a great point. They definitely had a lot of incredible victories last year. A lot of one-run wins, and that's a good thing. They played baseball well. They played good in the clutch. They were able to come from behind. They did a lot of good things, but to count on that for next year is going to be a pretty tall order. That's going to be tough to repeat. And you say, well, we're better than we were last year, but last year was definitely a magical season for them, at least until the playoffs, and it's going to be tough to repeat that magic.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. It's such a, like we were talking last week, it's just such a winnable division, so it should be exciting. Okay, not going to keep any longer. TR, thank you so much. Take care.
All right, Allison, thank you.
The Oakland A's concluded the winter meetings with, exactly the same team as they started with, because they were very quiet, but they're still 6 weeks left to go in the off season, so we'll keep our eye on what they're doing. Let's talk to Jane Lee about that. I'm Allison Fetter. Jane, they really had a very quiet winter meetings, and they're in search of they're still in search of a center fielder, correct? Is that their main priority?
Yes, they need a center fielder badly. It kind of depends. I mean, I think right now you look at who's off the board, who's on the board as far as free agents go. I'm not sure that there's any real fits in that area. I think they're more inclined to find one through a trade. And there are teams out there right now. When you look at the Royals, they have a surplus of outfielders, several of which are going to be free agents at the end of next season. And I know throughout the winter meetings and the A's had been linked to Jerod Dyson. I wrote about him a couple times just because he is a good fit for them. I mean, it's not a splashy name, but, you know, let's be realistic. It's the A's. They're not about to go out and get, you know, one of those big free agent names or, you know, for that matter, someone like a big name through a trade. So I think, you know, you look at their roster, they need a leadoff guy. They want to improve on their defense. They want to improve on their on-base percentage. I mean, Dyson brings all of those things, and I think he could be a nice complement to their lineup while also upgrading their defense. And beyond that, I mean, they're really keeping their eyes out for essentially anyone. They're casting a wide net. I know the Rockies are another team right now. After adding Ian Desmond, you kind of look to see where they go next. You know, do they trade one of their outfielders? So I think there are options out there, but the A's aren't the only team looking for a center fielder, and I think that's kind of what is maybe slowing things down or, you know, preventing them from maybe making a deal sooner than later. But there's still a ton of time left, and, I mean, you see teams all the time making a lot of their bigger moves, you know, in December and January and sometimes even February. So it's not like, you know, they're going to go into center or go into spring training without having made a deal. I mean, this will get done at some point or another. They've been very adamant about the fact that they need a center fielder just because there's no short-term or long-term options in their organization right now. So that still remains their number one need the rest of the winter.
Yeah, it is. There was such a flurry of deals that were done at the winter meetings that it's easy to forget that you don't actually have to make all your deals at the winter meetings. And there's been years where, you know, the winter meetings are actually pretty quiet, but certainly not this year. So moving on to a totally different topic. So the A's have shifted their Fan Fest from their ballpark to a different area. Fan Fest is coming up, I think, at the end of January. So seems like they are trying to upgrade in that area while they're trying to upgrade their team. But what can you tell us about the Fan Fest?
Yeah, I think right now, while they're just kind of, you know, going through their search for a new stadium site and being realistic about the fact that they will remain in the Coliseum for at least several more years, in the meantime, they really want to upgrade the fan experience. They want to get fans back into the Coliseum. And their attendance has just been absolutely awful for several years. And with a new president coming in, Dave Cavill, I mean, he's looking at, you know, every avenue to do this. And I think for him, it kind of started with FanFest and, you know, maybe switching things up a bit. And not only are they moving locations and moving it to a really nice location. I mean, Jack London Square, just one of those waterfront destinations, real enjoyable, lots around, just a good atmosphere. But they're also making it free for fans, which I know a lot of teams do, but in the past, I think the A's had charged fans maybe $5, $6 to get in, but not this year. They're making it free for them. And I know there's always a ton of player involvement, so I'm kind of interested to see how, you know, they set things up and how it all works out. But it's kind of exciting to see, you know, someone coming in and making changes and really wanting to just improve that fan experience. And I think I saw Cavill tweeting the other day also about maybe bringing food trucks to the Coliseum. And I don't think it's any secret that the food options at the Coliseum right now aren't the most inspiring. I don't think that it's ever been a destination for foodies, but you know, I think so for him to recognize that and you know, be thinking of creative ways to maybe draw in more fans. I mean, it's a good thing. It's a step in the right direction. Of course, the Coliseum's not going to be you know, fixed overnight. They're not going to get a new stadium overnight, but there's little things that they can do in the interim, and I think the fact that they are focusing on that, something we really haven't seen, you know, it is nice to see.
Yeah, one last question, and I know this is way before your time, is way before my time, but so I'm not going to ask you the details on his broadcasting career. But Bill King, the late broadcaster for the A's and a big and many other sports in the Bay Area. It was announced last week that he is receiving the 4C Frick Award for excellence in baseball broadcasting. This selection resonated. I mean, it was so talked about. I saw people that knew him, like, just overcome with emotion that he finally won this award. He passed away, I believe, 11 years ago. I'm sure that as somebody that covers baseball in the Bay Area, you have probably learned a lot about him over time. But just were you kind of struck by, like, how ecstatic people that knew him were that he won this award?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an emotional day for so many people in the Bay Area. And not just people close to the A's, but, I mean, he resonated with, I mean, you know, beyond baseball. Of course, he also did broadcasting with the Warriors and the Raiders as well. And his impact in the community in the Bay Area, I mean, it can't be overstated. And, I mean, there's so many people that had been waiting for this day for so long. I think, you know, everyone would agree that Ken Korak, the A's radio broadcaster. I mean, no one wanted this more than he did. I mean, he wanted this so badly for Bill that he wrote a book about him. And I mean, he did everything he could to get him into the Hall of Fame. And I know, you know, he spent, I think, most of his morning crying when he found out the news. So I mean, you know, you really, really were happy for guys like Korak and, of course, for Bill King's family. And just really cool to see, because I think it got to a point where people were wondering, you know, is this ever going to happen? And the fact that it did, I mean, people are just absolutely thrilled. And it really was a cool day for the A's and also for the Bay Area.
Yeah, I think it's great. And, yeah, Ken Korak is feels so passionately about him. It was such a sad loss when he passed away. So good for everybody. Okay, Jane, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next time.
All right, thank you.
The Houston Astros clearly have a lineup that could take them all the way to a championship, but the question is, do they have enough pitching? And that is the question that's going to continue for a while the Astros try to figure out what they're going to do. Let's talk to Brian McTaggart about that. I'm Allison Futter. Tags, you and I don't know if we totally agree on this. I think you like their pitching more than I do. You think that their starting pitching is actually probably better than maybe some of us do, like me. You think they have enough starting pitching to take them all the way to a championship at this point?
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, I think it has a chance to be good. You know, they're going to, if they don't make another move, they're going to have to cross their fingers in a lot of areas. And if things fall into place, then yeah, I do. But I certainly think if they add another arm, that, you know, obviously that's going to help them and push them and we'll give them some wiggle room in case things go wrong. But I think they're in a position where if they go into next year with the pitchers they have now, that they could look to make a move at the trade deadline. I mean, I don't think there's a team that's going to be out of it. I mean, they're definitely going to be in contention unless there's just some kind of catastrophe. So I think if they go into the season and, you know, maybe they're not where they want to be in July, they can make a trade. But, you know, I know the trade that was proposed recently, Quintana for – you know, their top two prospects, Martez and Kyle Tucker for Musgrove, that's probably one I wouldn't have done either. That's just a high price to pay, and I don't think they have to make a deal like that right now. But I do think they should add another pitcher, and I know they're trying, but if they don't, I think it's not the end of the world. They can do it down the road.
Yeah, you put it out on Twitter proposing that trade, and I think that most of the fans said don't do it.
Yeah.
Which I tend to agree. I mean, that was like an extremely high price. I guess it's just like all of these guys, like Musgrove, was it Martez? Like, they have the ability to probably work their way into the rotation on a more permanent basis in 2017, which would certainly take care of the need to bring someone from the outside. It's just the question is with these young guys that don't have the track record. I mean, it's you're taking a big risk, I guess, by assuming that they're going to be able to just do that.
Yeah, you are. And, you know, you're assuming even with Keiko McCullers that they're going to be healthy, and you're assuming McHugh's going to be a little more consistent. So, yeah, they have a rotation, but like I said, there's a lot of ifs and buts. And, you know, if you look over at the Boston Red Sox, you look at that rotation, and if the Astros want to win a World Series, which is, I think they believe their window's here now, I mean, if they're matched up with the Red Sox in a seven-game series, how in the world are they going to match up with that rotation? I mean, it's you got three Cy Young winners. You know, anything can happen in the playoffs, but I think they need to look that far down the road. Is that, hey, we need one more guy that if we do get in a playoff series where we think we're going to be, we can help better match up with a team like the Red Sox.
Yeah, we talked last week, so it hasn't been that long since we've had an Astros conversation, but it does bear worth repeating that the lineup is insanely ridiculous the way it is, the way that it looks on paper. It's when you think like that Carlos Beltran might be like your number seven hitter, you know, that's pretty good. It seems like, I mean, if you go through the division, I just can't imagine that anybody would be better when it comes to lineups than the Astros. I mean, they have to, do you think that anybody would pick the Rangers at this point to win the division over the Astros, like any, you know, insiders, experts, all that stuff?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, you can look at the Rangers pitching and say, hey, that, you know, they got the pitching, they got, you know, Hamels and Darvish at the top and some other guys. But, you know, if you look at what have the Rangers done this offseason, maybe their lineup, they've lost guys. They've lost Beltran. They've lost Mitch Moreland. So they've, you know, they've had a couple of key subtractions. I think there was one more, too, in there I'm missing. But I was always the guy that said, I'm not going to pick against the Rangers to win the division over the Astros until the Astros actually do it. But I think with the offseason so far, it'd be hard not to pick the Astros. Just, I think they have the best lineup in the American League, and it's a lineup I think would be on par with the Cubs at this point. That might be a little crazy to say, but, you know, the Cubs did lose Dexter Fowler, so maybe not as crazy. But, yeah, the lineup is deep. They have a little of everything. And that goes back to our earlier point on pitching, is that their lineup is so good that they can afford, I think, to wait until the right pitching deal comes, whether it's next week or February or July, without having to mortgage their future, thinking, hey, we have to make a deal, because they do have a lineup I think it's going to be able to outscore a lot of teams.
Yeah, no, I think that this lineup absolutely matches up with the Cubs lineup. It might be a little bit better. We'll have to see how some of these guys play over in a full season. But, yeah, my money's on the Astros at this point when it comes to offense. So let's move to an entirely different subject, which would be the Hall of Fame, the pending Hall of Fame announcement. So Jeff Bagwell is on the ballot again, obviously. The early returns, which mean very little because it'll drop several percentage points, but he's on most of the ballots that have been made public so far. So I kind of think that this is the year he gets in, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, 71.6% last year, and
yep.
I've written a couple of times, I think 16 of the 17 guys who've gotten that much have gone in the next year. So, by the early, it looks, I mean, it would be a really big upset at this point if he doesn't make it in. You get that close and, you know, a couple other guys come off the ballot. I mean, I think he's right there, and I certainly would be surprised if he doesn't make it. I mean, I think he'll be pushing 80% when all is said and done, and, you know, seventh year on the ballot. And it's, you know, last year I think was a big relief for him because he sputtered there for a while. I mean, I think he debuted on the ballot about 55%. He went down and then hung around to 50 to 55 for, you know, like 4 or 5 years. And, you know, they lowered the cutoff now from 15 years to 10. So he's only got a few more years to do this. So he needed a big jump last year, and he got it. And if he doesn't get in this year, it might be a Biggio thing a couple of years ago where he's, you know, just a couple of votes shy. But I certainly believe, based on everything that, you know, just the way this has worked historically and his voting percentage last year and the ballots that are public so far, that he'll get in.
Yeah, the only thing that worries me is, and he made such a big jump last year, but it was mostly due to the fact that the electoral body shrunk by 100. voters. And he actually only gained like 9 votes from the year before, but the percentage went up. So he doesn't have that in his corner anymore. So that while there'll still be a couple writers who are no longer baseball writers lopped off every year, it's going to be a lot more steady. So, and there's always like this huge drop off. I think like right before the announcement of all the public ballots, he was at like 78% or 79%. He dropped all the way down to 71%. But, but you have to wonder, because of just how many baseball, non-baseball writers were, had their votes taken away last year, it may be closer than we think it might be.
Yeah. And I think Piazza going in was a big deal because a lot of people painted them with the same brush. You know, they they put up all these huge numbers in the steroid era, but were never implicated. And, you know, some people had were a little weary of them. But I think Piazza getting in, a guy that, you know, hasn't been proven to do anything and thrived in that era, you know, Bagwell's the same. And I think that might push a few voters, too, who were maybe on the fence about him, saying, well, if Piazza's in, then Bagwell's got to get a vote as well.
Right. Well, it could be another fun year in Cooperstown for Houston people. So, okay, Tax, thank you very much. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
The Angels are taking steps to make sure that they are competitive in 2017. They've acquired a couple of players that could help them. Let's talk to Richard Justice about all that. I'm Allison Sutter. Richard, let's start with Danny Espinoza, who was acquired from the Nationals, a second baseman. So what do the Angels have in him?
Timing is everything. You know, they needed a second baseman. They probably didn't have the prospects to get Brian Dozier or Ian Kinsler. Neil Walker went back to the Mets. And Danny Espinoza, God bless him, fell right in their laps. I mean, after the Nationals made the trade that essentially moved Trey Turner back to shortstop, he was not happy. He skipped FanFest. He's a career National, 29 years old. Played 779 games there, and most of those games 500 at second base. And here's what they're getting in him. He's a guy who hit 24 home runs last year. He's not going to hit much for batting average, 226, but he can catch the ball, and he's got one of the really good throwing arms you'll ever see. So, you know, as Billy Epler weighed the pluses and minuses of, let's say, Chase Utley, Danny Espinoza is younger. He's a fiery little guy, probably brings something to the clubhouse in that respect. But he's a major league player, and I think they have a young guy, David Fletcher, at AA, who's going to play someday. But for now, this is a good quality major league player that they put in there. Okay, you know, again, 24 home runs, but he's not going to hit for a high batting average. And you throw him in there with Cameron Maben, who Billy Epler got to play left field. Been a pretty productive offseason for the Angels. And you know, you mentioned about being competitive. Fangraphs, who does the projected standings with every day, I think they update them, they now have the Angels at 85 wins. That's the fourth most. That if that's right, if all their numbers are right, the Angels would host the AL wildcard game next year. They have the fourth best record other than the three division winners. And then, you know, that's obviously based on Garrett Richards being healthy and Matt Shoemaker and all that. A lot of things falling into place. Albert Pujols coming back. But I think they feel pretty good about where they are right now.
I think that 85 wins is a ridiculous projection for the Anaheim Angels. I'm sorry. Yes, that is based on everyone being healthy. And that is a ridiculous assumption because that's not how baseball works.
But the other side of that is, okay, you've got to have Garrett Richards healthy. That's the key. Then they have eight starting pitchers, and that's probably what you need. You know,
that's what they had last year.
Right. That's right. You could have a yes, but on Haney, Skaggs, Nolasco, Shoemaker, Troppiano, Meyer. Not all those guys are going to be ready on opening day. They're moving this kid Ramirez into the rotation. How is Houston Street's health? You know, obviously Pujols is a big factor. But I think when you look at the landscape, you could say there's a yes, but with almost every team. Boston's really good. You know, he's counting on Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers to be healthy. Seattle's got some questions all throughout their rotation. Where is King Felix at in his career? Where is Iwakuma now? What about those guys at the back of the rotation? So it's sort of the league has become yes, but. You know, I was thinking about that with the Cardinals the other day. If Waka and Wainwright are healthy, they might have the best rotation in baseball. If they're not healthy and they're not productive, it could be a long year in St. Louis. So let's just say the glass is half full. How about that?
Okay, your glass is half full. Mine isn't quite so full. But, okay, that's good because these make for good conversations.
Yeah.
Okay, they got a backup catcher, Martin Maldonado, who was acquired from the Brewers. So why him?
Why him? He's a familiar face. They drafted him in 2004, and they released him in the offseason before the 2007 season. Apparently he might have had an off-field issue or two. But here's why you get him back. You know, and he was a backup to Jonathan LaCroix, and he's got a great arm. He didn't play that much, but he was 12th in framing pitches in terms of, and for, you know, people understand that's stealing strikes. You know, and I think you and I were there in the postseason when Tito Francona said, I've watched tape of Yadier Molina steal pitches, and I still can't see the glove move. It's a real art to it. We know Jason Castro, who was good at that. So in terms of a backup catcher, what you'll get is they still plan for young Carlos Perez to be the starter. It feels like a step in the right direction, and they know him, and he will know coming in what his role is.
So moving on to sort of a more interesting tidbit, Torrey Hunter Jr. is leaving his current role as a college football player to try to begin his career with the Angels. This is, of course, news because of his name, Torrey Hunter Jr. He'd be the son of Torrey Hunter Sr. So is that why we're talking about
that? That's called connecting the dots. He was a 23rd round draft pick last summer, and I think he kind of planned all along. Well, I don't know that he was going to give up. He planned all along to play baseball, but I don't know if he planned on giving up his final season at Notre Dame. He hasn't played baseball since high school. But that was 2012. But, you know, because his name is Torrey Hunter Jr., because Mike Socia had Torrey for, I think, 5 seasons, because Mike remembers Torrey Hunter Jr. when he was just a wee little kid. He loves the family, loves the kid, and feels like, hey, you know, like 100 other prospects you look at every year, he's got a chance, and he's certainly got the DNA to be a good player. If he's got some of his pop's personality, outgoing personality and work ethic and all, he'll have a better chance. So, you know, in a slow off season, it's a guy that everybody will go come to camp and go, now which one is the son of, and watch him play a little bit.
So looking over the Angels off season, there's still plenty of time left, but where do you think they stand? Do you think that they're done maneuvering? What more holes do they need to fill?
I think getting the second baseman and getting Cameron Maben to play left finishes the heavy lifting. Now, where he is at, with like every other team, would he like an extra outfielder? Yes. Would he like another starting pitcher, another reliever? Yes. All of that. He got his catcher. So, but I think if they went to camp today with where they're at, they would feel pretty good about it. You know, again, we'll say this every week. The whole season hinges on Garrett Richards being healthy. All the medicals are good. Billy Epler is staying in touch with him and all that. I still think they will look at bringing Jared Weaver back. I mean, he's a career Angel. They all know him. They love him. And it comes down to how much money do you assign him to a minor league contract? What's the market for him? He's been out looking around. And it would look odd seeing him in a uniform other than the Angels. But truly, at this point, we don't know what he's got left in the tank, and he probably doesn't know.
Okay. Richard, thanks for your time as always. Talk to you soon. As we discussed last week, the Seattle Mariners should be right in the thick of contention in 2017 in a very winnable AL West. Let's talk to Greg Jobs about the Mariners. I am Allison Fetter. Greg, I was reading some of your information on the Mariners website today, and somebody asked in one of your inboxes, is the team better than last year's team? Is the lineup better than last year's? Will the rotation be improved? And so overall, now that the winter meetings are over, of course, there's still time to wheel and deal. How do you kind of see the team as it stands right now?
Yeah, those are fun questions to ask in December, but you know, there's still some work to be done on the rotation. So I'm gonna put that one as a TBA, a TBD, or whatever you want to call it. They're gonna get another starter. There's no question. And you know, when they do, we'll see where that slides in, and then we'll have a better idea how that rotation stacks up. I think the lineup is definitely better with Gene Segura coming over in trade from the D-backs and giving them a legitimate leadoff hitter that they really need, and a good offensive shortstop. I mean, their infield, Allison, is pretty darn good offensively, especially with Cano, Segura, and Seager there, and the combination of Danny Valencia. He's a very good right-handed hitter, and they're going to see what Dan Vogelbach can do at first base in combination with him. But that's a pretty stacked lineup offensively, and they go young in the outfield, and I like what they're trying to do there. They're trying to get some speed and athleticism, and we're going to see a lot of Ben Gamble, a lot of Mitch Haniger, the kid they picked up in the D-backs as well, and Leonis Martin, who had a pretty darn good year last year, and Nelson Cruz in the middle of that with what he's been doing. I think you got some pretty good stuff there. So I like where they are offensively. They surprised some people last year with the power that they hit with. So we'll see where they go. But I think certainly that the rotation is to be seen, and we'll see where they go. I like how they're stacked up depth-wise, but they would certainly like to add a kind of a middle of the rotation guy to kind of beef that thing up a little bit more.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it last week, and I kind of had a chuckle because, I totally get the Taiwan Walker trade. I totally get it, and I think that it is probably going to end up being a good deal on both sides. But it's just funny to hear the Mariners say, okay, we need a starting pitcher, and they just traded one away. It's hard to... It's not like you could just go and find them so easily. I mean, it costs a ton of money on the free agent market, and it costs valuable prospects if you make a trade. It's sort of like they kind of asked for this by trading away somebody that they had high hopes for a year ago.
Well, there's no question, and it's not like they didn't know that. I mean, they felt like they had a position of strength there and needed wanted it secure, so they had to give up something to get him, and they gave up Taiwan Walker. So how that comes out over the long run will remain to be seen. I think they felt anyway that they were in better position to refill the rotation than they were to go out and get an impact player like Segura at the top of the lineup. So there's that deal, and now they got to fill that gap. You listen to DePoto; he loves what they've got. You know, 12 starters deep, which is pretty good. He just thinks that kind of impact guy in the middle of the rotation, they can certainly use a kind of an innings eater. And you know, maybe they had some questions on Taiwan. I mean, he as a guy that had been projected very highly for a long time, and they were still kind of waiting to see it. So, you know, what's behind the scenes, why they move a guy, who knows. They certainly like James Paxton, what he brought last year. They like Ariel Miranda that they brought in by trade. You know, to me, the question really, and you look at Felix and Iwakuma, and these are two guys with some mileage on their arms. Iwakuma 35, and he's going to be 36 next year. And Felix, obviously, you know, he's 31, going to be 31. And, last year, the first year, that he kind of hit a speed bump, both when he was healthy and then getting hurt. He wasn't quite the same Felix. So, I think therein lies the questions that we'll have to wait and see. So, to bring in another arm, certainly to add some insurance should they run into any problems with those guys atop the rotation. And, you know, sure, it's hard to get through 162 games without having some kind of issues. So certainly you can see why they, like most teams, are always looking for arms.
Yeah, that was my next question about Felix. I mean, it's kind of a bummer that those questions now have to start popping up. But once you have that season where you miss a lot of time with injury, then that starts to become a question mark. I mean, not only with Felix, one of the top pitchers in all of baseball, but the durability was such a selling point with him, and the ability to, produce 200 innings in a season. So they have to be biting their nails a little bit, I would imagine, over the next couple of years, just to see where this goes. You think that that's a concern with them? And remind us, how many more years are left on his contract, approximately?
I lose track. I think he's got, three more years after this?
I thought it was more like seven. Okay, so that's all right.
Cano has seven. So,
right.
Felix, I think it's three after this year. So I think he's got four more. That, is it a concern? Of course it's a concern. I think every team has them. Felix, I mean, you've penciled him in so many years. It's unbelievable, really. I mean, 8 years in a row with 200-plus innings. I mean, it was 10 years in a row with 180 or 190 innings. I mean, that you don't do that, and he did. So, inevitably, last year, was it a horrible year? No. I think he pitched 150 innings. He missed 7 weeks with the calf injury. It wasn't an arm injury, interestingly. So he is human. in his ERA. What he finished 11-8 with about a 3.6, 3.7 ERA. These are not horrible numbers, but when you're Felix Hernandez, it's not what you expect. If his strikeouts were down, his walks were up. You know, the peripheral things were that you look at. You can turn his velocity down. They're very interested to see what he does this offseason. Apparently, he's been working out. They're very encouraged by what the early reports they've got. He's working with, I think, fascinatingly, Robinson Cano's trainer that he trained with last year when he rehabbed off his abdominal surgery. So he had the double hernia surgery and worked out and came back in great shape. He hooked up Felix with the guy, and he's working out with him. So that can only help. Felix, I think, most interesting story this offseason to me is he's going to go pitch in winter ball in Venezuela and then pitch in the WBC in the spring. And this is for Felix a vast departure from what he normally does in the offseason, which is not saying he doesn't work in the offseason, but when he comes to spring training, he generally is the last Mariner pitcher to take the mound. He's the last pitcher. He's kind of had his own schedule, and that has worked well for him. As we just talked about, he's pitched 200 innings. You don't question that too much until it starts to hit a little bump and he gets a little older and he turns 30 and maybe he's got to do some things differently. So they're going to push him earlier this year, partly on his own volition because he wants to pitch in the WBC. So they're going to let him pitch in Venezuela, get some innings under his belt and all those things. So that's an interesting experiment to me because, you know, you're going to remain to be seen how he feels in, August and September after starting earlier. So we'll see how that goes. I think it's going to be a key to the season, and if he handles it well and they get the big Felix of old, that's a huge, huge boost. If suddenly he's having struggles down the second half because he started earlier or any other reason, then it's going to be a problem for the Mariners.
Yeah, you know, the WBC is such an interesting thing to me because it's obviously a big initiative with Major League Baseball, hugely important. All teams are encouraged to encourage their players to participate. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the pitching conundrum. And they've been very, very good about having strict pitch limits, innings limits, really, really making sure that they're not overworking these guys. But I would imagine that the executives and the front offices for all the teams get really concerned. I mean, they can't tell them not to pitch. But the Mariners cannot be happy that Felix wants to pitch at the WBC. I mean, they'll never admit it, but that can't be, like, great news for them.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, Jerry DePoto is the most positive guy you can be around, and if you talk to him about it, he will convince you that this is a good thing. It's like I said, to get Felix going early, they see us at his age, maybe this is what he needs to do. And they certainly
They're certainly
hopeful that him working hard this offseason will be a good thing for his longevity over the course of the year. How that plays out, I don't know. I mean, they are a team, that's a pretty international team, Allison. I looked at it just the other day. We're going to go into spring and Nelson Cruz, Robinson Cano are going to be suddenly gone. Hernandez, James Paxton is going to pitch in the WBC. Edwin Diaz, their young closer, is going to be gone. Valencia, that they just acquired, their first baseman. I mean, this is a pretty good chunk of their starting lineup. They're two-fifths of the rotation, and their closer are all going to be gone for a couple of weeks while they're training. And if their teams do well, two or three weeks. So it's going to be an interesting spring. As it always is every 4 years. They report a little bit earlier and they try to get guys working a little earlier, but as far as cohesion and working out together and kind of doing the team thing, pretty big impact on a lot of teams, and the Mariners certainly will be one of those in the middle of March when you see a lot of the big names gone.
Well, okay, you can mark me down officially as disagreeing with DePoto that this is a good idea for Felix to start that early, but I also say knows way more about this stuff than I do. I remember in 2006, the first WBC, and I was covering the Astros, and I'm watching Roy Oswalt pitch for Team USA, and I think Davey Johnson was the manager at the time. I could be wrong on that. But anyway, whoever was managing, and Roy was in there for what I felt were too many pitches. I was screaming at the TV. The concern is just because of the time of year. It's not like these guys are some, like China dolls. I mean, they're not fragile, but it's just putting that many innings. I guess maybe pitching in winter ball might make it a little bit easier. But it's just these guys, you know, March is the time when you're trying to just get back into the swing of things and not so much, you know, like you're not in September mode. I mean, that's what,
right.
That's what's concerning for me.
It's definitely interesting. And 4 years ago, Felix didn't pitch in the WBC. At the time, he was negotiating his new contract with the Mariners and his extension. So that was actually 4 years ago, and that was a seven-year deal. So I guess we do the math. He's got three years after this. But, he didn't pitch. Iwakuma didn't pitch 4 years ago and is not pitching in this one either, I don't believe. Paxton, though, that's an interesting one. I mean, he's a young guy with, you know, certainly – big upside, strong arm, and you wouldn't think WBC should be a big problem for him. But you know, Paxton is a guy that hasn't pitched a full season in the majors yet because of various issues. So does it get him ready early or does it cause him problems? I mean, I guess if when you pitch, things happen. You know, it's hard on your arm, and you know, whether you're pitching the WBC or spring training or whatever, things can happen. But I kind of agree with you. You know, you put that kind of extra stress in the big game situations, it can be pretty hard when you're pitching in March in those kind of situations. But on the flip side, if you want to take it this way, I mean, these guys are going to be pitching in Cactus League games in March as well. It's not like it's just crazy. It's not like we're in November, January or something where they don't normally throw much at all. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think for the position players, different story. I mean, those guys are getting their Bs and doing their thing. So I don't think it's a big factor there, but it does kind of disrupt spring. It makes things different. I think it's good for the Mariners. This isn't like Scott Service's first year. You know, it would have been very odd for, a new manager to come in, trying to work with guys, and all of a sudden those guys are gone for a couple of weeks. So as far as team cohesion and those things, you know, they're a pretty good group from last year. I don't see that being a big problem, but, you know, you're talking about working on fundamentals together and doing those kind of drills, and you know, they're going to have to do things earlier and get together later when they come back for the last couple of weeks and handle things a little differently than normal.
All right. Mariners front office, I'm putting my trust in you. I will defer to them. But there'll be plenty of time to talk about that. Okay. I won't keep you anymore. Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
You bet, Allison. Take care.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.